UCB, please make some noise for Not In My Backyard!
Everything's wrong with the universe, accepting change is hard. Everything's bad and it's getting worse, but not in my backyard.
How's everybody doing tonight?
We always have to wait for that chorus. That chorus of that song, it's like I can't talk before
it
comes out.
We can't talk over the name of our own show.
Otherwise, you won't know why you're here.
Thank you guys so much for coming out. We are the host of Not In My Backyard. My name is Charlie Todd.
And I'm Cody Lindquist. We're going to get this out of the way now. We are a married couple.
Thank you so much for your applause, for our love. We met here as comedians 20 years ago at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
And somehow we're only 25. Don't Google it.
I should disclose right now that I'm a member of the Transportation Planning Committee of Manhattan Community Board 4, but my views tonight do not necessarily reflect those of the board.
Yes. And I should disclose that I am an elected member of the Community Education Council for District 2 in Manhattan. But my views today do not reflect the views of the council. They're just mine and mine alone.
So we do the show every month here at UCB Theater. Mm-hmm. We also release the show as a podcast, so you can subscribe to the podcast. But we always have a very smart audience who knows a whole lot about New York City.
I'd say the smartest in New York, I think.
I think so. So we're going to do some pop quiz questions to test the knowledge of our audience.
Don't worry,
up top, okay?
These grades don't count. We're not writing it down.
All right,
do your best. So
here's the first question, and you can shout out the number and Price is Right rules. How many people attended the Knicks victory parade? How many people attended? Shout it out. 2.5 million? Mm-hmm. 2 million? Mm-hmm. Answer is 2 million. Very nice. Okay.
Now this next one, how many New York City residents voted in Tuesday's primary election?
10,000.
Wow. A lot of New Yorkers don't care about politics.
Anyone else? 900,000. 300,000. Okay, I'm going to give it to 450,000. The correct answer was 531,000 people.
Are we impressed by that?
I mean, it's a city of 8+ million people.
All of those people are eligible to vote. Some are children.
Not everybody's
18. The
children
didn't vote, so, you know.
It was about half of the turnout from the Mom Donnie primary 1 year ago.
Guys, get out there and vote. These elections matter.
Okay, we're going to do one more quiz, and this is a head-to-head quiz with a prize, and I need people to volunteer to come on stage to do it. We need two volunteers, and the topic is New York Knicks. So knowing that topic, who wants to raise their hand to come on stage? You don't have to know that much.
Yeah, really. It's not going to be that difficult.
If you can
there's no stats, that sort of thing.
If you can name a Knicks player, you might win. All right, come on up.
Come on up. You can't let her do it alone. Come on.
Come on up. All right, we got two.
Oh, I don't know. This person is wearing a Knicks hat, so this might be heating up.
All right, what's your name?
Allie.
And what's your name?
Zeb,
okay.
Allie versus Zeb. Okay.
And you're a Knicks fan?
Yeah.
I mean, who isn't? Am I right?
All right, so here's the question, and it's going to be head-to-head, so don't blurt it out yet. But the question is, how many current members of the New York Knicks can you name? And we'll start with you, Zeb, and then we'll go to Allie, and we're going to go back and forth until someone can no longer name a New York Knicks.
So you just have to name one, and then we'll go back.
Bridges.
Bridges, okay. Mikal Bridges, all right.
Brunson.
Jalen Brunson, going with the easy one. Good strategy.
Ananobi,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Hart.
Hart is correct.
Towns.
Towns is correct.
Towns is correct.
All right, that's time. Can you name more, Zeb?
Native New Yorker, maybe?
Right, let's give it up for Zeb. He won.
Jose Alvarado.
All right, thank you, Allie. Jose Alvarado is who we were looking for. Also would have accepted a lot of other names that I didn't know. You guys can both have a seat. And Zeb, you've won 2 free tickets to our next show.
Woo-hoo!
Just follow us on Instagram, at NIMBY Show, and send me a direct message there.
Next time we have to do, how many Knicks players did you know before last week? And most of us would be like, none. Jalen?
Yeah, Jalen. We wouldn't know Jalen. Cody is in a television commercial with Jalen Brunson, by the way. She's in a Lowe's home improvement commercial.
Did you guys know that Jalen Brunson works at Lowe's? He works at Lowe's in his spare time.
In this commercial, he does.
He does. I don't know. He's a Renaissance man. He's very busy.
All right, so a couple of announcements before we bring our wonderful panel out. Mark your calendars for our next show. It's going to be on Thursday, July 30th at 8:30 p.m. right here at UCB. That's different than our normal time of 7 p.m., so it'll
be
8:30.
We have a great panel.
We have an outstanding panel. We have Miser from Micromobility NYC subreddit. We have Zubin Parang from The Daily Show and City Council member Carl Wilson on the panel.
He's our City Council member, so we will be exclusively lobbying him for
That's right.
Of our pet projects on the next show. Join us. It'll be fun.
Follow us on Instagram for details of future shows at NIMBY_show. All right. Are you guys ready to meet our amazing panel? She's a writer and community manager for the New York Groove and a licensed NYC tour guide. Please welcome Jess Joseph.
He's a very funny comedian who will be appearing at the Bell House on July 15th. New York Magazine once called him a very gay comic. Please welcome Jake Cornell.
She's the author of the book Life After Cars and host of the War on Cars podcast. Please welcome Sarah Goodyear.
All right, who's everyone's favorite? Nick.
Jose Alvarado.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. You're also a native New Yorker, so you know.
He plays street ball. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
I'm an Ananobi girl.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He was so cute. How demure he was when he dunked that in. He's like, "It's cool. I did it. I did it."
It's very cool.
Well, we want to start talking. Start the show talking about Mom Donnie. All of Mom Donnie's squad won their primary race on Tuesday.
Crazy.
Guys, ooh. Is New York seeing a sea change in local politics? What is happening? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge change in New York politics, and it is terrifying a lot of people. That's how you know how big it is.
They're like, wait, we want corrupt politicians. Where's Eric Adams stealing all the money? Allegedly. I didn't say that. Don't come at me.
I think that when you bring like Disney Prince energy to, you know, the electoral state,
yes,
and that energy spreads. Fun fact, I went to high school with Zoran, and he had the same energy in high school, and that charisma definitely spread. So yes, we're starting a new movement,
gosh,
but also having pure charisma is so helpful.
So you went to Bronx Science, and Zoran, yes, was a year younger than you. Was he in student government? Like,
I don't remember. I'm pretty sure he ran. What I remember most is that he was very popular and engaged with some of the seniors in a way that was very notable for a junior. And I'll leave it at that.
So he was a junior who dated some senior girls.
Yes,
as a junior.
Was, yeah, yeah, I'll leave it at that for now. But and probably also ran for student government. But that's what I remember.
So he went to senior prom
stuff
as a junior. Wow, that's big.
I don't remember, but probably
that's huge. If true, that's huge
for a guy especially.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, it's. Mom Donnie had a big win. Mom Donnie seems to be running high, and the vibes in the city are off the charts. Last week, the city came together to celebrate the Knicks' first NBA championship in 53 years, and one man's viral chant electrified us all. MD Hossein, the 23-year-old New York Knicks fan who popularized the viral chant, "My mayor Muslim, my bagel Jewish, my Christian Dior, Knicks in 4," later amended to "The Pope's on our side, Knicks in 5. What do you guys make of the city coming together for this team, and what are your reflections on the energy two Saturdays ago when we were all in the streets?
I thought it felt good as hell. I had a great time. I think there's something really nice about the fact that like the city, it doesn't feel like anyone was sort of being gatekeepy about the energy of it. It was like everyone in the city was welcome to jump on board with this thing and celebrate it and be a part of it. In a way, I remember saying to my friends, like, in a very weird way, it reminded me of COVID. Like, it was the first thing that like the city was experiencing like as one. That
you,
like,
you were cheering the whole time during COVID.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I was
super excited about it.
Yeah. But it felt like this thing where I was like, oh, every person in the city is experiencing the same thing at the same time right now. And I hadn't felt that in like 6 years, but it was like a much nicer version in a way that was like almost kind of full circle healing. Maybe that was like a personal experience for me, but that's really how I felt.
Yeah, I mean, I think Zoran said, you know, like, it's so usual for the city to come together around these tragedies and 9/11, COVID, Sandy, but to do it around something with joy was so amazing. And I actually was on a quest to get a certain t-shirt from a street vendor. There was a couple days when I was like really obsessed with getting this t-shirt for my son because he had injured himself playing basketball, and I wanted to get him this particular t-shirt, and I'd gotten one for myself, but I didn't get one in his size, and he was really mad at me. So I spent all this time like going to all the vendors around Madison Square Garden and like finding out like, when is the next shipment of t-shirts coming in? It was like there was like this whole very deep ecosystem going on that
New
like,
York
just
is,
sprung up.
Yeah, New York is very entrepreneurial. I biked down to the parade. I didn't get anywhere close to the parade because I biked down at 9 o'clock in the morning. But just on like the perimeter of the parade, like two avenues over on West Broadway, just the number of people selling t-shirts, the number of people selling nutcrackers, and also like syringes full of alcohol. And this is 9 a.m.
Allegedly, we don't know what was in those.
You could buy a blue liquid or orange liquid syringe, which I presume was some kind of nutcracker type beverage.
That is so New York to be like, I don't know that guy.
They were selling well. They're selling quite well at 9 a.m.
New Yorkers are like, sure, why not?
Yeah, I'm down here at a parade. I'm not going to see anybody because I'm three avenues away and I'm in a big crowd, so I'll just buy a bootleg t-shirt and a shot of orange.
Yeah.
And people were doing
it. I love that.
Yeah.
There's like a pent-up energy, I think. And I think it's not just in New York. It's all over. Like, we just want to rally around something. We're so, you know, not to bring it back to the country being so divided, but we are. It feels so controversial. You don't know who you can talk to, all the things. And it's just like, we're all like excited to be happy again, right? About something. We have a mayor that, regardless of what you think of him, he is a joyful person. He exudes joy. So it is, it does feel like we just all wanted to, like, we're dying to celebrate something.
I also think there was an element of, like, being outside that was so helpful. I loved, like, the games being streamed on Link stations, on, like, bars on almost every corner.
Yeah, Andrew, let's get photo number one up,
yes.
I think, the Knicks watch parties. Yeah, so this was 10th Avenue. This is our local bodega, 10th Avenue and 45th Street. But, like, every game, it just got bigger and bigger, and we took over, like, two lanes of traffic and the parking lane. It was beautiful.
There were kids. They let all the kids go up front. All of our neighborhood kids were there, and it was just joyful.
In my neighborhood, when the night they won, there were several people in cargo bikes who were, like, doing these loops and parading down Smith Street in their cargo bikes over and over again. It was madness, and it was perfect. And, yes, that's what it's like. If we take our streets back from automobiles, look at all the great things that happen.
And the next time we're all going to be in the street celebrating together is when he dies.
Oh, you know it.
And it will happen. It will happen.
When it happens.
It will happen.
You're not causing it. You're not asking for it.
Well,
but
I
we're
thought
just saying
that,
it will.
I thought that should have been the champ is my bagels. Or what? Like, Trump's going to die, Nixon 5. That's what I thought it should have been.
There we go.
But listen, he's 80, okay? He's 80 years old. We're saying natural causes.
But the other times where I've felt that exuberance, where the city's coming together for a positive thing, 2008, when Obama was elected, people were partying in the streets, and lesser remembered, but 2020, when the Saturday, like 5 days after the election, when they called it for Biden,
oh, that was a party.
That was
a
great
big party.
Day.
That
we were all like wearing masks and walking around outside, but it was a great day. Should Mom Donnie have given kids the day off from school for the parade? There was a little bit of controversy around that.
If anything, did it make it difficult for kids to get to school?
It did.
Like
there
that, I think, is maybe the bigger.
There were
reason,
a lot of
like
kids.
The logistics.
Yeah,
as someone who bartended in the West Village for four years and is a proud gay man, the ire I felt towards the Gay Pride Parade every year, having to get to my brunch shift through the Gay Pride Parade.
I worked in Fifth Avenue for years.
The pain of that, and your manager being like, it's your responsibility to get to work on time. It's like, well, West 4th doesn't let off on the other side of the parade, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I think that is maybe a better reason than just being like the sports of it all.
Yeah, I have sympathy for the kids whose school was like literally by the Canyon of Heroes, and there are a couple of schools down there.
And a kid got arrested, sadly. He was trying to go to his Regents exam. exam. That was the other thing. It was,
yeah, it was the
during
Regents
exam
exams.
Time, yeah.
So he couldn't really cancel the Regents exams.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But the Regents
well, we're canceling them anyway.
Canceled. They should just not exist.
Is that
the Regents aren't going to exist
no,
in 2 years.
No, the Regents are like this. It's this thing. There's
the
these
New York,
Regents.
I'm a former
they
teacher.
Won't exist in 2 years.
I'm a former teacher, and as a former teacher, I have two things to say. One is that the Regents is a little absurd. It's a New York State only diploma qualification. If you took a Regents diploma, if you have a Regents diploma, can you raise your hand? Yes. Clap it up for them, please.
Got some OGs in the audience.
Is it like graduating with honors?
No.
Yeah, no, it's like
you have to.
You have to pass the Regents to graduate in New York. And mm-hmm. so it's like.
You have to pass a test to graduate in New York?
Yes. Multiple tests.
Yes.
And they arrested a kid for trying to do this?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Guys.
But guys, they're getting rid of the Regents in 2 years. Yeah. They're phased out. So I don't think our children will have them.
No, nothing will stop
That's
them.
That's good. My son had to take them during 2020, the COVID. It was just, it's not fair.
Oh, God.
I think Mom Donnie made the right call. People like slept all night on the street to go to that parade. There were 2 million people. The kids had no business being next to those orange syringes. Like, it was fine. Like,
they should have canceled it for the teachers.
Get wasted while their kids are in school. We need somewhere for my kid to be safely while I'm getting drunk.
That very Nick's knowledgeable young man who was up on the stage earlier, does he have an opinion about whether...
Zeb, should you have gone to school that day?
Oh,
he went to the parade!
Zeb went to the parade!
Yeah. Okay.
But went to the parade but didn't get close. Yeah, that was most people's experience. Yeah. All right, I want to talk about someone else's experience at the parade, which is a J.P. Morgan executive who has been fired after a video showed her stealing an orange and blue trash can from the Knicks championship parade.
This is my
so DSNY
story.
Custom painted the classic like green metal trash cans along the parade route, and she just emptied the trash can onto the street and took it on the subway home.
Yeah,
and was seen in social media videos. Which
did
led
she
to
win
her
a primary race yesterday?
She did not.
She should. She ran for Congress. She would have won.
If you could get away with it, would you want a blue and orange DSNY trash can in your home?
Yes.
Oh yeah, hell yes. But I would not ever dump trash onto the street. That's the part that's like taking the trash can is understandable.
She should have brought her own bag and put everything in and tied it up. I wouldn't want one because they don't have a lid.
It's also too big. Sorry, I don't know how big y'all's apartments are, but it's objectively too large.
Yeah.
It
would be an enormous statement piece in a New York City apartment.
What if it was made into a table?
That could be interesting.
You could shave
like
down the bottom.
Like a high top? A high top table?
This is the thing that I think people are starting to, like, this is a new cultural thing that's happening where I think that, like, people are going to have to start understanding that one of the, like, side effects of having, like, a high-powered job, like, it's so amazing. Like, great, you became a J.P. Morgan vice president or whatever. Like, you achieve this. You now, like, that is how you will be described in a headline, and that is going to significantly affect the sympathy you will receive. Yes. Do you know what I mean? If it was, like, Parks employee gets fired, I'd be like, let him take the garbage can. I'm like, J.P. Morgan, I'm like, wait till they release it online and buy it. Like, really, did you need to dump it? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't feel bad for her at all.
All right, guys. James Dolan has confirmed the Knicks have accepted an invitation to the White House. Should they go? How do they not
If one of
go?
Them does it.
No, I actually just read this afternoon that Jalen Brunson is like, we'll see what happens.
Oh, my best friend that I work
with? Yeah, exactly. That you work so closely. You're,
well, he might have a low
collaborator.
Shift. Maybe he can't go.
Yeah, he has a low shift. We both have a low shift. I'm going to write a letter to Trump and let him know he's busy.
I mean, I don't know. Like, my feeling about this is that I'm not going to freak out if they end up having to go because it's a really, really difficult situation. If your boss is like saying, we have to go to my friend's house.
Yeah,
totally. But the boss's friend cursed you, and the only game you lost in like a 15-game streak was when your boss's friend was there.
I know, but I think it's just, it's a very difficult position for them to be. I guess what I'm doing is I'm pre-forgiving them if they end up going.
Yeah.
They could just be like, the East Wing isn't ready yet, and I can't, like, the East Wing you tore down, and I need the ballroom. I'm waiting.
I think it objectively sucks if they go, but I will take comfort, and I know Trump will feel insecure about how short he will look next to all of them.
I also think he'll be charmed by them. like he's constantly charmed by charming, you know, like people. And so like the last time we sent some New Yorker to the White House, it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, we should send the next, but they should be asking for like the 34th Street bus lane and for congestion pricing to be $20.
Yeah.
That's what I think also, we have to like send the message to them so they can speak on behalf of everyone.
They should paint
JD
blue and then they'll be blue and orange for them. That'd be fun.
And that is actually a really good idea. They could put a curse on him. I'm just saying.
Return the curse.
They are. They're covered in luck right now.
I want to talk about another person that got fired. There was an act of campaign sabotage during primary voting on Tuesday when a real estate board of New York vice president of legislative affairs got into hot water after he was filmed removing campaign signs for New York 12 congressional candidate Jack Schlossberg from a streetlight post and throwing them in the trash. So he was taking down campaign ads, putting them in the trash. He was promptly fired after the video was posted. Did this man deserve to be fired?
Well, I'm sorry, but Schlossberg was trash, so. I mean, no, I don't know. I think you're allowed, I mean,
a campaign ad put on a streetlight is trash. You're not allowed to put campaign ads up on streetlights.
I mean, I don't think that's a fireable offense, no.
Yeah. It's just cleaning up the city. It's doing a public service.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it was a Jack Schlossberg poster, like,
I would argue it worked because no one knew who Jack Schlossberg was and they didn't vote for him. And they would have known who he was if those posters had stayed up. Like, that was his biggest problem in that campaign is that no one knew who he was.
Right, because he had no name recognition.
No name recognition.
Or heritage.
None. He didn't magically put Kennedy on the ballot.
Yeah, I think this became news because the guy worked for REBNY, the Real Estate Board of New York, and that makes him a villain and tearing down a campaign ad. But yeah, you can tear down flyers all the time that shouldn't be somewhere. I don't know. Maybe I should lose my job.
All right, can we get photo number two? We're going to do a real, real right turn here. Members of the Orthodox Jewish community are demanding the pervasive Museum of Sex advertisements on the front of nearly every MTA bus come down. Multiple public speakers at the MTA's monthly board meeting said they were repulsed and hurt by the colorful museum ads that appear on the buses that simply state the name of the institution and that they are, quote, harmful to children. Rabbi Abraham Zimmerman said Orthodox Jews are forbidden to willingly look at ads and images that attract them to sex. We are very hurt and upset when such ads are thrown and forced in front of our faces. MTA Chair Jano Lieber said that the MTA is bound by First Amendment obligations to prevent the agency from becoming the censor of all ads, which are reviewed by the advertising committee. What does the panel think of the ads? Has anyone been to the Museum
Speechless.
Of Sex?
I mean, I guess, you know, these are the same people who don't want there to be a bike lane going through Williamsburg because there might be scantily clad women.
Women in shorts.
Exactly.
I often bike in bicycles. A thong. Yeah. Often. Just a thong, nothing else.
But if they're not allowed to look at ads that make them think about sex, I cannot think that this is the ad that makes them think about sex.
Yeah, for literally, like, I mean, for those who are listening, it just says Museum of Sex in a font. That's it.
So one funny detail is...
I don't know. 5th and 27th is a sexy fucking corner. So maybe it's that.
So there's a reason it says 5th and 27th, because originally the ads, and these ads, by the way, are on almost every MTA bus, at least every M11, because my child takes the M11, and every day I see this ad. Now, originally, it just said Museum of Sex, and apparently some of the bus drivers were getting harassed because people were acting like the bus itself was the Museum of Sex and, like, cracking jokes at the bus drivers. So the MTA said, you have to put the address of the Museum of Sex on this ad, which is why it's sort of awkwardly in the middle. It's a terrible graphic design.
Wait, I will say, though, like, sorry, I'm having this, like, thought in this moment, like, who is funding the Museum of Sex? Like, where did they get this ad budget? Like, has anyone here gone?
I went a very long time ago on a really bad date and
like,
never
it's
went
giving,
back.
It's giving, like, Mattress Firm. Like, there's some sort of conspiracy happening.
You're
here.
Right.
Like,
it's like a cult is behind it, and they're using
like,
this to get you in the door.
Like,
yeah.
What's happening?
There's laundering money of there, absolutely.
It's prime real estate.
In the news article about this, I read that they have on display a Braille copy of Playboy. So... you know, it sounds interesting. I'd like to see a Braille Playboy.
Can you read Braille, Charlie?
I could read that kind of Braille, I bet.
Okay. All right. I think we need to move on to Red Lobster. The Times Square Red Lobster closed, citing years of long scaffolding as the reason the location wasn't working out. Former mayoral hopeful Curtis Sliwa was a huge fan of Red Lobster in Times Square, and he said he was going to sit Shiva at the family-friendly restaurant for 8 days, but he ended up only being there for 2 nights in the final week. Has anyone ever been and had the Cheddar Bay biscuits at the Times Square Red Lobster? R.I.P.
I have, yeah.
Do you miss it?
I don't. I'm sad it's gone. It feels like Times Square should have a Red Lobster. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, I kind of want us to have a showing of, I mean, I think the Times Square should have a Cheesecake Factory. Like, we should be showing, like, you know what I mean? We should be showing, like, kind of America's greatest chains
that,
there.
I will say that is a tragedy that they don't. Because all the people from Ohio, my people, so I'm allowed to say it, how are they supposed to feel comfortable when they're there if there's not a Cheesecake Factory?
It's also just like, it's a waste of, it's money on the table. Like, it would be so, the Cheesecake Factory in Times Square would be booked out 4 months. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You would have to make, it'd be like Hillstone.
Because it would be like, I'm having my fancy dinner after my play, and it is a Cheesecake Factory.
Yes, exactly. So
I can't walk over to 9th Avenue where there's an actual Michelin star restaurant.
No.
I need the comfort and love of a 72-page menu Cheesecake Factory,
But I am sad for Red Lobster that closed because I think there is a lot of memories. There's a lot of history there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there? I'm so baffled. Like, I could not tell you where in Times Square it was. What I hear the tourists, they're always talking about the M&M store. It's like the M&M store is like, that to me feels core now. I don't know how that happened, but like Red Lobster, we're not a lobster. I don't get it. No, but Curtis made this story for me, Curtis Sliwa, because sort of like anything that he does now, I just think it's adorable. So
he also said that people often confuse him for a lobster because of his red beret.
They thought that he worked there. They're like, "Do you own this place?" He's like, "No." I was a frequenter of the all-you-can-eat never-ending pasta bowl at the Olive Garden in Times Square. That was one of my fave places to go when I first moved to New York and had no money. And I would eat it and sneak it into a box and put it in my purse.
Yeah, to me, the greatest time, like the thing that Times Square lost, that was to me the end of a true era, was the Toys R Us with the Ferris wheel.
Oh, the Toys R Us with the
Ferris wheel. As a child, that to me was like, I'm going to go, like one day I will go there and I will see God. And I did.
Yeah. We used to bring our older son there, and then it closed between then and our second son. So he never experienced it.
All right. I want to move on to some bike related topics, because we do have one of the generals of the Warren Cars here on stage with us. So if we could get photo number 3 up, please, Andrew. The New York Post lost their minds when Mamdani was caught on a bicycle on the day of the Israel Day parade. That's why it says cycle of hate, because he was on a bicycle and not at the Israel parade. Do they not understand that going on a bike ride means getting from one place to another quickly? Like, what is the disconnect of people thinking like, oh, he snubs the parade and goes on a bike ride instead? Like, you wouldn't say like, he snubbed the parade and went on an SUV ride. You know, why don't people understand that cycling is for transportation, Sarah?
Because they think that bicycles are toys. I mean, a lot of people think that. I think that's a less common feeling in New York. I mean, I think most people in New York understand bicycles are transportation, they're work vehicles, they're a lot of things. But I think they just want to get the word hate in the headline a lot, because that was actually, I think, Slate of Hate or something like that was their headline after the election. Yeah. So they're just like, they just want, and somebody I saw on Blue Sky said that, like, the thing about this guy is that he always looks like Kermit is just out of frame. so it's hard to like get whipped up about him.
Look at his smile.
This is the Disney Prince energy coming back. There he is. It's great.
I will say, we need to get him a better bike lock. That's so cuttable, that little cord by his at the bottom of his seat.
Also, his seat needs to come up a little bit.
Oh, can't seat shame Mamdani.
No, but you have,
no shame.
In a suit, it's hard to get your leg over the high seat that hard.
That's true.
I've been in that challenge before, so that might have been what that was.
Fair enough.
All right, some bike lane news. There's going to be a new bike lane connecting Brooklyn to the Brooklyn Bridge. It seems like Mamdani's Department of Transportation is announcing a new bike lane every week. Last week, they announced they are adding a two-way protected lane on Adams Street in Brooklyn leading to the Brooklyn Bridge. Previously, riders had to use an unsafe painted lane to get to and from the busy bridge crossing. Last year, a publication or a website called People for Bikes ranked Brooklyn as the number one city for cycling in the country, with Manhattan far behind at number 10. And the question I'm asking, does the panel agree with this? We still, as of yet, do not have a bike lane to get to the Brooklyn Bridge, and yet this publication thinks that Brooklyn is number one and Manhattan is number 10.
I took that bike lane today, and I did not know that they had just announced this. And when I was taking that like painted, I said out loud, this can't be how this works. Like, it is a crazy way to get off the bridge to like the next bike lane. It's really deeply not intuitive and unsafe.
Yeah. So we have three people from Brooklyn here. Would you, Sarah, defend Brooklyn? You've been all around the country and seen bike lanes all over. Do you think Brooklyn's number one, better than Manhattan?
Absolutely is not number one. No. There's way too many what are called sharrows, which are like painted things. They're not even painted bike lanes. They're just like a bike, you know, a bike symbol and an arrow. And it's like basically a place to die. So no, it's not good enough. Although it is so much, maybe it's most improved. I don't know. But like, it is better than Manhattan though.
How can it be better than Manhattan? We have protected lane on almost every avenue in Manhattan.
Charlie's pulling his community board transportation committee hat on.
Now, I think Manhattan gets dinged because there's a lot of traffic. There are a lot of cars. And you can be in Midwood, Brooklyn, where there's not a bike lane in sight, but it's like they're calm neighborhood streets if you're not on the arterial roads. And it is fine and pleasant mostly to bike on until an asshole comes up behind you.
What city would you say is the best?
I mean, I think we were talking about this city in the green room. I would say Minneapolis is probably
the fucking best, the best city. Love
Got
it.
Got some Minneapolis
just
fans.
For pure biking.
All right. Well, we'll see. I think if Mamdani fixes this, maybe Brooklyn deserves the crown. Also in Brooklyn, there's a new bridge. We got a new bridge, guys. Reading from Gothamist, the historic Carroll Street Bridge reopened after a five-year repair project shut down the key connection over the Gowanus Canal. The landmarked 137-year-old crossing is one of the oldest in the city and has a unique design. It's shaped like a trapezoid and is retractable. It can split apart to allow boats and barges to pass. The crossing used to be open to vehicle traffic, but it is now only available for pedestrians, cyclists, and emergency vehicles. Has anybody been on the bridge yet? And where should we build the next car-free bridge in the city?
Okay, so this is my neighborhood. And I was on that bridge like the day that it opened. And there was an impromptu party with people singing and dancing. There was an opera singer sang arias from the top of one of the buildings nearby.
That is
we
so
all
Brooklyn.
Stood on the
that is
on the
so
bridge.
Brooklyn.
I love
and
it.
So anyway, I've loved this bridge forever, and it's been closed for a long time. Before it was closed, I also loved it, and you could walk over it, but cars could go over it. And now what's crazy about it is that you can stand or sit right in the middle of the Gowanus Canal, which is now becoming a neighborhood because it was rezoned, and there's a lot of big buildings going up with tons of apartments. And the great thing about sitting on that bridge is that there you cannot hear car traffic anywhere because the buildings protect you from the nearest streets where there are cars. And you're just on the canal, and there's one other bridge a couple blocks away that goes over the, and that's the only place that there's an occasional car going by. So when this opera singer was singing from this top of this building, you could hear her because there were no cars. And it was just the most beautiful experience. The Gowanus Canal improbably is actually going to become one of the most peaceful, lovely environments in the borough of Brooklyn because there are no cars there. So yay to that.
Yeah, that is really cool. Yeah, we can get some applause for that.
I think the Roosevelt Island Bridge, less than 9,000 people use it every day. It's already mostly car-free. And it's such a beautiful way to just go, so absolutely. And also, it's such little usage. Why not?
Yeah, there's a parking deck on the Roosevelt Island side of it, so those people might not like it if it goes car-free. But they can take the tram like everybody else, right, on the island.
And
the
also
tram.
The tram's fun, guys. We know. The tram is fun. It's a fun
also
way to get around.
The first commuter tram in the country.
We have a licensed tour guide here. Any other tram knowledge you want to drop?
Not yet. But
we'll see if it naturally, organically comes up later. Yeah. We'll
do have to pay extra for the tram knowledge.
All right, I want to talk about dancing in bars. New York bars and restaurants can officially allow dancing after the state liquor authority nixed a long-standing law. Under the new policy, liquor license applicants may now leave the section related to the patron dancing blank. By eliminating this antiquated restriction on dancing, we're making it easier for businesses to succeed and for New Yorkers and visitors alike to experience the energy and excitement that define our state, says Kathy Hochul. And then she sang Footloose really loud. That's a lie. That did not happen. Question, what restaurant are you guys excited about dancing in, huh?
Well, if there were still a Red Lobster in Times Square, that would be
Cheesecake
obvious.
Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, we all know the Cheesecake Factory is number one, and we have to. This would have saved the Red Lobster, 100%.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't think about that before. Jess, do you have a favorite restaurant you want to dance in?
Selka recently went back to 24-hour service on weekends, which is huge. And I've, like, had too many instances of FOMO watching, like, Eastern European dance lessons happening in the vicinity. And I would love to dance while having pierogies.
That's the perfect answer. Yeah. That's the correct answer.
That is great. Oh, Veselka. I missed Veselka.
Yeah.
The late night.
Back.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Yes.
We want to talk about Elmo now. I want to bring it back to Elmo.
Yeah, to bring it back to the Knicks briefly, before the first game of the NBA Finals, Elmo posted on X. First of all, why is Elmo still on X? I think we need to roast him for that. Elmo posted, Elmo hopes both teams have fun. He was immediately dragged by New Yorkers. The NYC DOT jokingly threatened to remove the Sesame Street Way street sign. Elmo is a New Yorker. Sesame Street is set in New York. Did he deserve the hate he received on the internet?
Yeah, have you heard him say balsamic vinegar?
No, like, how does he say it?
He says, like, balsamic vinegar. And if you say it that way, you are not allowed to root for both teams. That's absolutely crazy. So the guy who had his head on a pike during the Knicks parade really understood my views on this. So,
I think Cookie Monster is going to take care of it, though.
He actually posted an apology, on his ex account. I don't know why these guys are hanging out at the Nazi bar.
Who are their parents? Why aren't they, like, regulating their screen time? Speaking of native New Yorkers, J-Lo has something to say. She was recently on the hit social media show Subway Takes, where her take was, you have to be born in New York to be a New Yorker. She claimed to not be aware of the 10-year rule, and she went on to say that even if you've lived here for 50 years, that you are not a New Yorker. It's worth noting that J-Lo currently lives in Los Angeles. So what do we think about her take? We have two native New Yorkers.
Well, I think we have one native New Yorker, right? It's just Sarah.
I don't think you have, by J-Lo's definition. You don't.
Oh, you weren't born in New York?
I was not born here, no.
Oh, I also wasn't born here.
But you both went to New York City schools. Yeah.
I got here when I was 4 years old. I went to nursery school here, for crying out loud. This is the most bullshit take ever. I mean, honest to Pete, that is the beautiful thing about our city, is that you don't have to be born here to be a New Yorker. That is, like, to me, that's the definition of it. I always joke that, for me, as someone who lived here since I was 4 years old, if you live here for 6 weeks and you still want to live here, you're one of us. Like, let's face it, like, it's a hard place to live. It's a challenging place to live. It's not to everybody's taste. If it's to your taste, if this seems great, come on in. You're part of it. What does she know? She hasn't lived here for years. I don't have any patience for this. I lived in Maine for a while. And that's what everybody in Maine, well, you'll never be from here. It's like, I don't want to be from here. I'm from New York. Like, so anyway, but, you know, I think it's just, it's very out of touch, and it's this kind of gatekeeping that was not the beautiful vibe that we had during the Knicks run. And you know, and, like, what are we going to say, that Mom Donnie is not a New Yorker? I mean, like, come on, man. Like,
Jess, you moved here when you were five?
Yeah, so I moved here from India. My parents moved here, landed on Halloween, New York City. Which was an incredible introduction to the city.
I think that instantly makes them a New Yorker.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. They did that. I think that it's about how much you engage with the city, right? So, like, for me, if you're, like, in cars all the time or, like, only in very specific areas or, like, only have friends of one demographic, you're not engaging with, like, what makes the city vibrant. I always think of that E.B. White quote, you know, there's, like, multiple kinds of New Yorkers is, like, the transplant, the commuter, and it is that, like, ebb and flow that makes the city what it is. So fuck J-Lo.
Yeah, I agree.
Jake, what do you think? Are you a New Yorker now?
Yeah, I mean, at this point in my life, I've lived, I mean, I was born in Rhode Island and then I grew up in Vermont for a while. At this point in my life, I've lived in New York longer than I've lived anywhere else in the world. So it's like, I don't really know what else I would describe myself as other than a New Yorker. I would never call myself a native New Yorker, but I do think I'm very much a New Yorker. Similar to what you say, my litmus test for it has always been, do you come here to be a part of what this city is, or are you coming here to say you live in New York and then actively trying to change New York into what you want it to be, which is actually just like Connecticut, right? And I mean, like, I think about like that New York, that
like
New York
people
magazine.
Asking for a Cheesecake Factory in Times Square, for instance.
Yeah, totally. I would never.
That's an example.
Exactly, but like, you know, I think a lot about like that really amazing New York magazine, like It Must Be Fun to Be a West Village Girl article, like sort of these like people who have moved here and then are actively doing work to make the city look more like what they like themselves and the people around them, rather than actively wanting to live in a place that is different than themselves and immerses them in other cultures and immerses them in other social scenes. And it's about navigating through those all the time. And to me, that's the line, is are you here to be a part of this thing and give to it, or are you here to take from it and try to change it to be what you want and still be able to say, I live in New York, even though what you're trying to do is not living in New York.
Yeah, I hope J-Lo's listening. I'm navigating the public school system with my children. I'm a fucking New Yorker, okay? 22 years. Thank you from your Hollywood Hills house. Yes. No, thank you, J-Lo.
All right, I want to talk about something very New York, which is scaffolding. If we could have photo number 4 up. The Department of Buildings this month put up 2 of the 6 new designs of sidewalk scaffolding sheds so the public can view them. I actually went by the other day accidentally. It's near Chambers Street, near City Hall. Mayor Mamdani said, these redesigned sheds will bring more light, more air, and more room to move, helping us reclaim our sidewalks for the people who use them every day. So this is one of the 2 designs that is on view. What does the panel think of the new sidewalk shed?
I'm deeply pro for 2 reasons. One is it's almost sad that we won't experience this anymore, but like there's nothing quite like the feeling of when the scaffolding is has been taken down around a place that's been part of your like daily commute for years.
It's like getting a cast off.
Do you remember like there was scaffolding by the old UCB training center that one day got took down, and it was like my depression dropped 50% from like experiencing that sunlight. And then also I will say the biggest thing, if you're looking at these posts that go through, there's no knob screws to get caught on. Like those are totally smooth. The number of times I've hit a hip bone or caught a bag or caught headphones on those covered cap screws, that's an incredible design.
Jess, what do you think?
I have been judging the quality of scaffolding by how easily it might be able to climb up on the next time the Knicks win. And so I feel like I'm gonna miss the poles, but with the power of community and friendship, these will still be climbable. So, yes.
Yeah, there's less opportunity for people to do pull-ups on the street with this design. But I think that the main feature of this design is it's got the like slatted roof. Their light gets through. So all the plants underneath it won't die.
I have a crazy idea. Maybe we should just figure out how to get the scaffolding down faster.
Oh.
Could we do that?
That could be great too.
We have the scaffolding up forever. That would be mine.
It's because buildings it's easier to keep the scaffolding up than it is to fix whatever issue it is with the front of the building. So often when you see scaffolding up for so long, it's because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Oh, the building should get fined if their scaffolding's up after a certain level.
Are we in a budget shortfall? Could this be a way to get more money?
That could be really cute.
Yeah, I feel like Eric Adams like actually did a little bit about like getting scaffolding down quicker, but let's just
no. That was in Albania,
him.
Not New York.
That was in Albania.
Yeah, right. He's a citizen of Albania.
Also, can I quickly about Eric Adams? Just a fun thing I like to tell people when I have the chance. You know how he's like famously a vegan. He was a regular at my friend's restaurant the entire time he was mayor, and he came in once a week and got a full branzino. So,
thank you. This is important stuff for people to know.
I want to talk about privately owned public spaces, also known as POPs, because we have an expert on POPs here on our panel, Jess Joseph. So you've written about them for the New York Groove and how building staff tried to prevent the public from actually enjoying them. This has been in the news lately. Recently, one Instagram user calling himself 780 Lord of Bench has been waging war with 780 Third Avenue and confronting the hostile building staff who set up sprinklers to face towards the public seating area to prevent people from sitting there. Jess, what is the current state of our privately owned public spaces in
Excellent
New York City?
Question. So Lord of Bench put a sit-in lunch situation there a few weeks ago that had a bunch of people attending it and like peacefully occupying it. Some backstory about Pops: they are one of the reasons that Occupy Wall Street was able to bloom, because the place that they were occupying was under like private ownership, so they couldn't really kick them out until the private owners decided to do something. But now people are really restricting it. So next week there is an event called Summer of Lud that's happening in like many different Pops. That's about like kind of occupying the space and like just, you know, enjoying them. They're often in FIDI in Midtown, and you are entitled to go and sit in them no matter what they say. So sit in them so we can increase this. And I think he's planning to have a monthly lunch meetup.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important, because this is one of the things that when developers want to build big buildings, they're always like negotiating with the city to, you know, oh, we'll give you this, we'll give you that, we'll give you the other thing. And a lot of the time they build a big building, but then the promise about whatever community benefit there was going to be doesn't get done. And so Pops are a very tangible thing that developers are giving back, and they're very important, obviously, you know, great places to hang out. And yeah, you should absolutely occupy them. And Zuccotti Park was like that whole Occupy Wall Street village was the best use of a Pop I've ever seen. But let's take them over and do more revolution.
There's a publicly available grand piano at the 180 Maiden Lane Pop. So go and play in it, because they'll sometimes try to stop you from doing it, but you have to. Real estate developers get tax breaks for giving this.
And there's a Pop in Trump Tower, right? I think like up on the second floor.
I think so, but I think they actually restricted access to that because of like presidential concerns or whatever.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about another shuttered business, if we could have photo number 5 up. After 86 years on Queens Boulevard in Elmhurst, a White Castle is closing its doors. The replacement apartments. Area historian Michael Perlman posted, "We do not need additional hideous high-rises in an already overdeveloped and highly trafficked vicinity. Schools are overcrowded and medical facilities are cramped." He also pointed to the restaurant's longtime cultural history. Do we mourn the death of this White Castle for housing?
I just want to say, actually, enrollment in New York City public schools is on a pretty sharp decline, as are all public schools all over the country, because people stopped having children. That's just a side note.
And charter schools.
There's a lot of multifaceted reasons, but in general, the population of people is going to go down. That's what I wanted to say about that. But that has nothing to do with building a high-rise. We are in a housing crisis.
Well, and also, as far as the traffic is concerned, isn't this like a drive-through? Or it's like definitely something that's designed to attract cars. It looks like something that's like a car magnet. But I mean, I have a slight sad feeling about this. It's very slight, though, because like if the world really needs a White Castle, there will be another place to put a White Castle. Like, I think this is a classic case of like blaming, you know, an apartment building for something that is not the apartment building's fault.
You could even put a White Castle on the first floor of an apartment
building.
They figured this out.
What if they just built on top of this? They just left the footprint as is, and this is the lobby.
There also still is a White Castle on 8th Avenue, no?
I think there's still one at 35th.
I think that one's going strong.
Now, my mom says the coffee at White Castle is great. I grew up, and she would go through it to get a coffee, and I was like, what is happening?
Wow.
She really loves a White Castle coffee. So that's a pro tip. Go to 8th Avenue and order a coffee at White Castle.
Because that Starbucks across the street from it always has a line.
Yeah, and then just go to White Castle, the Starbucks of hamburgers.
All right, speaking of drive-thrus, another car topic, since we have Sarah on the panel. Apparently, Gen Z hates cars. The Long Island newspaper Newsday ran an article about how teens are rejecting car culture. In a U-turn from past generations, local Gen Zers, those born between 1997 and 2012, and currently ages 14 to 29, say they're postponing road tests available at age 16, and if they eventually get a license, they're using it sparingly. Anti-driving anecdotes told by Gen Zers are supported by national statistics. The number of American 16-year-olds with a driver's license fell from roughly half in 1983 to 25% in 2022. Anxiety about navigating Long Island's busy and dangerous roads rank high among Gen Zers who opt to take bicycles, trains, Uber, and even skateboards to school and work. They also say the high cost of car ownership and concerns for the environment drive them away from the car. Sarah, is something changing with Gen Z? Is there hope?
I mean, I think there is hope. There was hope with the millennials too, though. So I want to be a little bit cautious about being hopeful, because millennials did have a slower uptake of driving than Gen X did. But I do think that there is a trend, and I think the great thing about Gen Z, and my son is 24, he's like very Gen Z, so he does not have a driver's license, and I'm the one nagging him to get a driver's license. So that's kind of funny. But you know, that they are bullshit detectors, Gen Z. It's like they are the ones who are like looking at all the systems everywhere around us and saying, this is not what you are telling me it is, and this sucks and it doesn't work. So it doesn't surprise me that when I've gone out on the road with my colleague Doug Gordon, who happens to be in the audience, and we've been taking this book around the country, and the audiences that we've been talking to, most of them have been like under 35 years old. And I think that there's a really, really strong movement and just realization among younger people: driving is expensive, it sucks, it's boring, it doesn't do the things you want it to do, and it's more fun to hang out with your friends on the train or ride bikes or whatever. So yeah, I think that's a real thing.
Jess, did you get a license growing up in the city? Did you get one at
I did, but I also learned how to drive in the Bronx, which was
so you can drive anywhere.
I can drive anywhere. It was an incredible defensive mechanism. I love it. I don't generally drive because I'm ethically against it, but sometimes it's fun, you know, because it's like a little. The challenge in the city, and you have to be extra mindful. So I like to practice those skills.
I mean, I think part of it, I don't know, Jake, because you didn't grow up in the city either, but like I had to get a license at 16 because I had to get to my job, I had to get to my friends. Like, you couldn't do anything without it.
I grew up in a really rural area, and
yeah,
so
me too.
A car was like, please, 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 because it meant like not having to like ask your parents for a ride to go see your friends, and like gave you autonomy, and like you could get yourself to school and stuff. So it was like, it freed you up so much. But my reaction to it was always, I felt so restricted by the fact that I needed the car in the first place that I was so desperate to move to a city where I didn't. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, now that I have a car, I love having it. It's like, I hate that I need this thing.
I've never owned a car because I have a driver's license and I needed a car, but I grew up with no money, so I couldn't afford a car. I saved up and went on a trip to Scotland. That's what I did instead. And then I moved to a city when I turned 18. Bye, never had a car.
I had a green Metro card as a student, and so we had, I think it was 7 rides a day back and forth. It was capped, but you could go anywhere. And so for me, the subway was freedom. That was that feeling. I did have that desire and, like, could not understand why cars were such a big part of, like, high school dramas and, like, you know, like teen shows. And so I feel very lucky to have had that.
Well, in New York, kids get the freedom earlier than other kids. Like, you know, we have a 12-year-old who rides the subway on his own. So, like, people are talking about their middle schoolers, and they're like, oh, they're just, you know, I have to drive him everywhere. I'm like, oh, I don't have to do anything with my kid. He's gone all day. I don't know where is he? We don't know.
All right.
We don't know where he is now. Nothing. We're great parents.
Speaking of people who went to high school in the Bronx, like Jess on stage, a 28-year-old woman attended high school in the Bronx for weeks before getting caught. She claimed to be a 16-year-old who had recently moved from Ohio.
Always Ohio. It's always Ohio.
Once caught, she said a friend made her do it in order to get more public assistance. Some kind of like money scam. Though it was unclear exactly what the racket was.
Huh.
Other students said the vibes were off. Should we be alarmed that a 28-year-old can just sign up for high school?
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure.
I don't know. I'm not alarmed. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Some of these con artists can get pretty clever, and I would have to see her. I'd be interested to see her.
She just came in with a backwards baseball cap. She's like 6'7", guys. Am I right? 6'7"? I'm 16.
But maybe she deserved the education. I don't know.
Like, could she pass the Regents? We don't know.
Right. We don't know.
Is she willing to take the Regents, then she's a New Yorker and it's all okay.
She did it for the free Metro card.
Yeah, maybe that was the scam. You get two rides a day. Or no,
only
you get four
if you
rides
live
a day.
Over half a mile away from school. If you live close, you don't get
the
one.
Rules.
Yes, we're trying very hard to get them to switch it back.
We just need to resource teachers more because teachers are just so tired that they see a 35-year-old woman at the back of their class and like, sure. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, we need, like, if people are like on their A game, they're gonna say something.
It was the kids, the ones that were like, dude, this woman's not a teenager.
Yeah. Like, totally.
The administration was like, huh?
Yeah.
She had a fake driver's license. Yeah, no. We were like, cool, this is what it looks like in Ohio, I guess.
All right, a couple of animal topics. Happy the Elephant died, a 55-year-old Asian elephant who captured the hearts of those who saw her at the Bronx Zoo for decades, has died. The zoo euthanized Happy the Elephant after a period of hospice care last month. Question, are zoos jails for animals?
We have an audience member that just said, yes.
I mean, I think they are. But the Bronx Zoo tries really hard to like do the sort of wildlife conservation part of what they do, and I understand that that's a real thing. I actually, when I was like 10, I spent a summer interning at the Central Park Children's Zoo, and this is when the Central Park Zoo was actually a zoo. That had like a cage with a lion pacing back and forth and looking suicidal. And it did not give me a good impression, but one of the cool things that we did was, you know, there's those like big wrought iron black cages at the corners of the sea lion pool.
Flacco lived.
Yes, and they put us in one of those one day, and they had the little kids who were working at the Children's Zoo, and they
New
put
York
a plaque
was crazy
out there.
Back then. They're
it
like,
really
we're
was.
Put you in
no,
the
but
cage.
They put a plaque out there, and it said, you know, human beings, Homo sapiens, the habitat, the world, and like everybody came to look at us in the cage, and we got on the evening news, and it was like really, really fun. I was like so into
it. You
but
took
it was,
away that this was fun.
Yeah,
being in a cage.
No, but like because we were like. Because I don't know, I like educating people. I like interacting with people. I don't know. Like, I was like, people were throwing peanuts at us and stuff. And it was like.
That is an unhinged PR stunt. Let's put humans behind a cage.
Yeah,
no,
what
you're
was
children.
Your messaging? Was
it
supposed
was
to be.
It was the 1970s, guys. Anything could happen.
Right, but was it pro-zoo or anti-zoo?
It was
the zoo
pro-zoo.
Was doing it.
It was pro-zoo, but it was supposed to, like, I think it was the people who worked at the zoo who hated the way the zoo was, who wanted to shut down the Central Park Zoo. It
I
was
see.
A site because
I see.
They eventually did shut down the Central Park Zoo, and the form that you see it in today has very little to do with the absolute, it was a torture chamber. I mean, it was really unbearable to see it, so...
Who are these adults that were throwing peanuts at you to get on the news?
Oh, there were other kids too, man. It was like, it was 1975 or whatever.
New York
like,
in the
70s. It was crazy, man.
There's Donald Trump just pelting.
Yeah, and then we were on Eyewitness
I'm imagining
news
he was there. It was the 70s, I'm assuming.
A J.P. Morgan executive trying to take you home.
Exactly.
I think Happy the Elephant has been unhappy for a while, and people felt bad for her because I think she was alone. I think her companion died five years ago.
Yes,
or something,
and they tried
maybe.
To get her to be friends with some. It's just not okay.
We went to an aquarium in Baltimore a couple weeks ago, and it was so sad. It used to be this incredible, like they had this huge tank, and they had the dolphins doing shows. And so they stopped because it's inhumane, but then they still have the dolphins in the tank.
Yeah.
And you just look and they're just, you know, they're just in a pool. It's just
these dolphins.
They're
not even they're not even having the stimulation of doing
that. I know. When Flacco got out, I was so happy. Bless.
They're screening the documentary on Flacco in Central Park this summer, so that'll be interesting.
I got out too. So.
Yeah, you made it out too. One other animal topic. I want to talk about dog food sales tax. So, friend of the show, Assemblymember Keith Powers is proposing legislation to make food for pets exempt from sales tax, just like how most food items at the local grocery store are for humans. Should dog food be sales tax free?
Any pet owners on the panel, first of all?
Yes.
Okay, so Jess, you get first
say.
What do you
like
think?
The child that I birthed, so why not get the same benefits? Yes, should be tax free, absolutely.
Okay, another weird thing from the 70s since I'm here.
They made you eat dog food when you were in the cage?
No, but it was like a big thing that old people back in the 70s were like their benefits didn't really exist and there wasn't as much social safety net as there is now, if you can believe that. And it was this thing, this expose that old people were eating dog food to survive.
What is happening?
Yes, I'm serious. This is real. You could even look it
up. Sometimes it's comforting to know things have always sucked.
And
I will tell you that.
And so that's the historical perspective I'm here to bring. And so anyway, so I have another friend who's my exact age, and we found out, she grew up in a different part of the country, and we found out that we both have this fear that someday we're going to... I said to her one day, I was like, yeah, well, at least I'm not eating dog food. And she was like, oh my God, do you have a thing about that too? And it turned out that we both had this like deep fear that we were gonna end up being these shriveled old people who could only afford dog food.
In a cage behind bars eating dog food.
I'm sorry, but I think isn't dog food expensive? The wet food?
Not the Alpo you used to get in the can. It was like,
I feel like that's princely stuff.
So I'm just saying, I think we should have no sales tax on dog food in case when I'm really old, I have to eat it.
Oh my gosh.
All right,
what a wonderful reason. We'll bring that to the assemblymen so we can write it in the bill.
My take is double the dog food tax and use all of the funds to clean our damn streets of dog poop.
Okay, I can see that.
All right, because the owners aren't doing it. Not all of them.
See, the problem with that is, so right now the law is like, it's a $250 fine if you're caught, right? I think we should incentivize like people catching people. Like, I'm thinking like stakeout operations. Like,
oh,
you
yes.
can
like the idling law, that. You can do this with idling vehicles.
Exactly.
In case you, yeah.
I think we apply the same to dog shit.
I think cops don't do their job, right? And I think crowdsourcing, also known as snitching, crowdsourcing police work, I think is a pretty good idea. It has worked for idling vehicles, and people are making a ton of money doing it. I would just take pictures of cars and bike lanes all day long for my full-time job if I could get a percentage of those fees.
And I think it like erodes the social fabric of community, so you should be punished by your fellow people.
Yeah, is it the NYPD's job to arrest or fine someone for, like, whose job is it?
It's DSNY. I think DSNY has an enforcement unit. But it's unrealistic for there to be
so
like...
No, calling the police, 911.
Yeah, it's unrealistic. It's not realistic for there to be like sanitation cops on every corner just looking at dogs' buttholes when waiting to see when somebody's going to walk away and not clean up after
job.
Their dog.
I will say that there should be more free doggy bag stations throughout the city.
Yes, and there's a bill in city council actually right now that is going to provide more bags, which I think is a positive step. But I agree with you, Jess. I think it's not realistic that one enforcement agent is going to catch someone. But if we all have eyes on the street and we can all citizens arrest people.
But here's my question: Have any of you shamed somebody who is doing it?
I wish I could catch someone in the act.
Yeah, you've never caught anybody?
They're so stealthy, these people. Like, when we had that awful snow, and there was just poop and pee everywhere, and it was like, you know, just sticking around. It's like you turn around, and you're like, there's more! Where did it come from?
It has to be like 2% of dog owners responsible for 98% of it. And the dogs must be so sick. I just don't understand how it's
they're
possible.
So sick, these dogs.
I don't get it.
They're apparently eating the wrong dog food. Apparently the kind that is not taxed.
Exactly.
Untaxed.
The kind you throw at children in zoos. Yeah.
That's right. All right. Well, it's time to wrap up. I want to hear what everybody has to plug. So, Jess, is there anything that you would like to plug? New York Groove?
Yes.
Anything else?
If you love a live political comedy show, the New York Groove is having a live show on 7/7 at Caveat. And the theme is New York versus everyone, because while it might be the 250th anniversary of the country or whatever, it's like the 400th anniversary of New York. And so come celebrate being a New York City Patriot with us on July 7th.
Hell yeah.
Amazing. Jake?
I will be at the Bell House on July 15th with a bunch of my friends. It's going to be a really, really fun show. Come hang out. It'll be a good time.
And I have a book out called Life After Cars, and it's still new enough that, like, hey, go buy a copy. It's pretty interesting, and if you think about cars and you don't like them, then you'll probably like this book.
Amazing. All right, can we give it up for our amazing panel? Thank you guys for coming out tonight. We are here every month. Our next show is July 30th at 8:30, and we've got Councilmember Carl Wilson. We've got Miser from Micromobility NYC,
and Juven Prang from The Daily Show.
So we want to thank UCB Theater for having us here, Tyler Walker for doing our theme song, and all of you lovely people for coming out. And please remember to vote in midterm elections. Good night, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Everything's wrong with the universe. Accepting change is hard. Everything